All glories to the Assembly of the Devotees. All glories to the Assembly of the Devotees. All glories to the Assembly of the Devotees. All glories to Sri Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Today we are reading from Canto 9, Chapter 19, King Yayati Achieves Liberation, Text 20. Dristam Shrutam Asad Budva. Dristam Shrutam Asad Budva. Nanudyayen na sandishet. Nanudyayen na sandishet. Samshritim chatma nasam cha. Samshritim chatma nasam. Samsritim chatmanasham cha. Tatra vidvan sa atmadrik. Tatra vidvan sa atmadrik. Dristam shrutam ashadbhutvam. Nanu dhyayen asandishet. Samsritim chatmanasham cha. Tatra vidvansa atmadrik. Dristam shrutam asad budva. Nanu dhyayen asandishet. Samshritim chatmanasham cha. Tatra vidvansa atmadrik. Dristam shrutam asad budva. Nanu dhyayen asandishet. Samsritim chatmanasham cha. Tatra vidvansa atmadrik. Prabhus. Dhristam shrutam asad budva. Nanu dhyayen asandishet. Samsritim chatmanasam cha. Tatra vidvamsa atmadrik. Padam asad budva. Nanu dhyayen asandishet. Samsritim Tatra vidvamsa atmadrik. Dristam shrutam asabhudva. Nanu dhyayen asandishet. Samsritim chatmanasam cha. Tatra vidvansa atmadrik. Isham rutam asad budva. Nainu dhyayen asandishet. Samsritim chatmanasam cha. tatra vidvan sat madrik. Nanu dhyayen nasandishet samsitim chatmanasam chap tatva vidvan sat madrik. God, sisters. Visam shutam asad buddhva nanudhyayen asandishet samsitim chatma asamcha tatra vidvan saat madrik dristam. The material enjoyment we experience in our present life. Shrutam, material enjoyment. Oh, material enjoyment as promise to the fruit of workers for future happiness, either in this life or in the next, in the heavenly planets, and so on. There's a whole purport in those two words, in that word. Asat, all temporary and bad. Buddha, knowing. Na, not. Anudhyayet, one should even think of. Na, nor. Sandishet, should actually enjoy. Samsritim, prolongation of material existence. Cha, end. Atmanasam, forgetfulness of one's constitutional position. Cha. As well as tatra, in such a subject matter. Vidvan, one who is completely aware. Saha, such a person. Atmadrik, a self-realized soul. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. One who knows that material happiness, whether good or bad, in this life or in the next, on this planet or on heavenly planets, is temporary and useless, and that an intelligent person should not try to enjoy or even think of such things, is the knower of the self. Such a self-realized person knows quite well that material happiness is the very cause of continued material existence and forgetfulness of one's own constitutional position. Purport. The living entity is a spiritual soul, and the material body is his encagement. This is the beginning of spiritual understanding. Dehinosmin yatadehe komaram yovanam jara. Tatadehantara praptir diras tatranam uyate. As the embodied soul continually passes in this body from boyhood to youth to old age, the soul similarly passes into another body at death. The self-realized soul is not bewildered by such a change. Bhagavad Gita 2:13. The real mission of human life is to get free from engagement in the material body. Therefore, Krishna descends to teach the conditioned soul about spiritual realization and how to become free from material bondage. Yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata. The word dharmasya glani mean pollution of one's existence. Our existence is now polluted and it must be purified. Satvam sudyet. The human life is meant for this purification, not for thinking of happiness in terms of the external body, which is the cause of material bondage. Therefore, in this verse, Maharaj Yayati advises that whatever material happiness we see and whatever is promised for enjoyment is all merely flickering and temporary. Abrahma bhuvanarloka punar avartino juna. Even if one is promoted to Brahmaloka, if one is not freed from material bondage, one must return to this planet, Earth, and continue in the miserable condition of material existence. Bhutva, bhutva praliyate. One should always keep this understanding in mind so as not to be allured by any kind of sense enjoyment in this life or in the next. One who is fully aware of this truth is self-realized, sa'atmadrik. But aside from him, everyone suffers in the cycle of birth and death, mrityu samsaravatmani. This understanding is one of true intelligence, and anything contrary to this is but a cause of unhappiness. Krishna bhakti nishkama ataiva shanta. Only a Krishna conscious person who knows the aim and object of life is peaceful. All others, whether karmis, jnanis, or yogis, are restless and cannot enjoy real peace. So, this is a very important verse because it's the second part of King Yayati's realization. So I'm going to repeat the verse. One who knows that material happiness, whether good or bad, in this life or in the next, on this planet or on the heavenly planets, is temporary and useless, and that an intelligent person should not even try to enjoy or even think of such things, is the knower of the self. Such a self-realized person knows quite well that material happiness is the very cause of continued material existence and forgetfulness of one's own constitutional position. Om agina timarandasya gina gina sirakaya chakshurin minitam yena tasmai shri guruve namaha. I offer my obeisances, my respectful obeisances to my spiritual master, who is opening my eyes daily with the torchlight of knowledge. What would we do without Srila Prabhupada? I love sitting here and giving class because Srila Prabhupada's picture, okay, Srila Prabhupada's picture is right above me. And this is a picture of Srila Prabhupada in New Vrindavan, the last time he was there. And I can just feel Srila Prabhupada's feet on my head, even though I never had the actual opportunity of being able to do that. So, the first two lines of this purport are actually very, very important. The living entity is a spiritual soul, and the material body is his encagement. It's not his engagement, it's his encagement. devotees were always talking about what our engagements are. Our material body is not our engagement. It is definitely our encagement. And at different stages in our life, we experience in varieties of ways how much we are encaged in our bodies. Srila Prabhupada, being a self-realized soul and understanding this fact perfectly, was not in the habit and is not in the habit of creating an illusion of happiness. There are so many gurus, so-called gurus, who kind of try to do that. It's okay, just, you know, just do this. Just say this mantra, you don't have to do anything else. Srila Prabhupada gave us a mantra, but he also gave us very specific instructions. And many of those specific instructions were about giving up sense gratification, because we can't understand that we're not these bodies unless we do that. It's very simple. I was thinking as I was preparing for this class of the gathering, the very beginning of the movement. I think, what was it called? It was the Avalon Ballroom, right? It was that ballroom where, which one was it? The Avalon Ballroom? Where the devotees made up a poster to attract everybody to come. And the poster did not read, "Your material body is a cage, please come in here." The poster read, "Stay high forever." So, Srila Prabhupada knew very well the mentality, and he knew that ultimately he had to first teach us that our material body is a cage. And Srila Prabhupada never compromised on this basic fact of spiritual life. We read that, we hear that over and over and over again in his purports, in his conversations, in his morning walks. He is always teaching that in one way or another. Of course, a preliminary or even superficial understanding of this fact is actually very liberating. So many of us experienced that when we came to the movement. I remember my first experience when my first time that I was seriously in the temple, and I was in a very poor mental condition and very miserable, very much identifying with the body, and really identifying with my mind, so much so that actually I was in a crazy condition. I couldn't even really read anymore because I couldn't follow the sequence of words. It's a little hard to imagine that the mind can become so pathetically destroyed. But that's the condition I was in. And after chanting in the temple for a little while, my husband came and said, "We have to go. Meet me in the book room," which was the reception room. And I had already experienced in the temple room a real lightning, a liberation, really. I felt it was amazing because I could understand that my crazy mind is not me. I had this little preliminary understanding. So then I went into the book room and took a long time, so I picked up a book, Perfection of Yoga. And I read, Prabhupada wrote, "You are not this mind. You are not this body. Wow. That was like an explosion. And I remember thinking, oh, so I don't have to identify with my mind, because that's not me. And immediately, I felt very, very liberated. And it was not just a temporary, momentary thing, because I did become a devotee, and I continued to experience that freedom from my mind. A short while later, we identify with the mind, we identify also with the body. I became rather ill a short while after becoming a devotee, and I was in the hospital emergency room waiting to see the doctor. And there was an old man, and I had been hearing the philosophy by then. I had been going to class, and there was a very old man, just like you see in the diorama Changing Bodies, you know, that last body, the old man, as he's falling down to become a skeleton. Well, that old man actually looked like that. And he was even laying on the hospital gurney in that position. And I was sitting there, new devotee, and thinking, oh, this is right out of the Bhagavatam, you know. It was amazing. And he was so ill, and he was just, his body was so completely collapsed. He could barely lift up his arm to scratch his forehead. And then at one point, a pretty nurse went by, and that old man's eyes followed that pretty nurse as if he could enjoy. And that was completely, that was again the Bhagavatam right in front of my eyes. So this conception that I am this body and that I am this mind is very deeply rooted. And we've all had on some level a realization that we're not the body or the mind. Right now I'm giving class, I'm having a little bit of realization as I was preparing the class. But 5 minutes later, I'll forget all that when I'm, you know, too hot or too hungry. I'll forget that. So to actually become free of this conception is not easy. Prabhupada says in the purport, the real mission of human life is to get free from the encagement of the material body. Again, that word, encagement. And Prabhupada uses the word mission. A mission. A mission is not just a goal. A mission is very serious. When someone has a mission, it means that they've got a very serious and lofty goal to achieve. Many, many years ago, I saw a movie called The Mission. I'll never forget this movie. In the movie, there was a man. It took place in South America. And this man had, rich man, had become entangled in some illicit sexual activity. And he was pious enough to recognize his fault and that he needed to atone and rectify himself. So he was given as a penance that he had to go into the jungles with the missionaries and assist with their mission that they had to execute. And as part of his austerity, he had to carry with him this huge bag of armor. And I don't know what else was in the bag, but it was definitely very heavy. And you see him at the beginning of the movie, he's walking through the jungle, and he's sweating, and he's struggling, and he's carrying this huge bag. Of course, that was his sinful reaction. And then at one point, he had to climb a waterfall. On the side of the waterfall, he had to climb all the way up to the top, still holding this bag. And when he got to the top, he was going to be at his destination, the mission where he's going to be serving. And as he got to the top, the bag became loose and fell. And then it was, Haribo! He was free. He was free of those reactions, of that sinful reaction. He dropped his big burden. But actually, even that was easy compared to the actual task of having, of realizing fully that we're not this body. And Srila Prabhupada says that the human life is meant for this purification, not for thinking of happiness in terms of the material body. So when one has a mission, a very serious goal, one has to have a vision, of what he's going to do. In New Vrindavan, at one time, we had an interfaith conference. And there was a woman, I forget who she was, I forget who she represented, I forget everything. Except that she got up and she said, very loud, "You have to have a vision!" And when she said that, I thought, wow, that's true. I have to have a vision. If I want to accomplish my mission, I must have a vision. I must see very clearly what is my goal. Martin Luther King, most of you know about him. He stood up in front of thousands of people and he said, "I have a vision." Srila Prabhupada, he definitely had a vision. He was sitting on the Lower East Side with a few crazy hippies and he said, "We will call our society the International Society, International, for Krishna Consciousness." They could barely afford the rent, but he had this vision of what it was going to be. And the vision is important because for most of us, fulfilling that mission is not going to be easy. We're going to have many distractions. We're probably going to fall down at one point or another, to one degree or another. Actually, I fall down every day. Every day I forget that I'm not this body. I forget that I should be only thinking of serving Krishna. You know, I always think of these mundane examples, but, you know, in a way it's good because it helps me remember Krishna through these ordinary things. One time, it was a few years ago, I was with my grandson, and he was playing on the computer this little Mario game. And, you know, these little characters, they go through all these obstacles. The obstacles pop up, then you have to destroy them, and then another one pops up, and you have to get through that one, and then they fall down to the next level, and then get over that obstacle, and then go up. And so they're constantly, right, the little characters constantly doing this kind of activity. So that should be us. That should be us. We should not expect, well, maybe we should expect, but we can expect that there will be difficulties, but we cannot lose track of the goal. We can actually be very much inspired by so many older devotees who came to Krishna consciousness and then later did fall down. They didn't fall down in a small way. They fell down in a big way. They fell down in a way that actually the whole movement was shaken by their fall down. But then, many years later, we see them at Rupuj. We see them again with the japa beads in their hands. We see them again running around serving Srila Prabhupada. So these devotees, for me, these devotees are a great inspiration. Maharaj Yayati was certainly distracted. But finally, he was blessed with a vision. I shall give up these material desires. I shall meditate on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And I shall keep this realization that the material body is an encagement. So just like Maharaj Yayati, we must endeavor to keep our vision, or distractions will overwhelm us. This verse calls us to have a vision, to have an understanding that we're not these bodies. And recently I was reading in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, chapter 20, verse 109. I always have a notebook. I write verses down. If you're not doing that, you should. It's a wonderful thing to do. And this, in this particular purport, Srila Prabhupada gives us the writing of Bhaktivinoda Thakur paraphrasing Lord Chaitanya's answer to Sanatan Goswami to the question, who am I? When I read this, I thought, wow, I need to remember this, and when we're preaching, we should know this by heart. So I will read it to you to finish my class. You are a pure living entity. You are neither the material body nor the subtle body composed of mind and intelligence. Actually, you are spirit soul, eternal, part and parcel of the Supreme Soul, Krishna. Therefore, you are his eternal servant. You belong to Krishna's marginal potency. There are two worlds, the spiritual world and the material world. You are situated between the material and spiritual potencies. You have a relationship with both the material and spiritual worlds. Therefore, you are called the marginal potency. You are related with Krishna as one and simultaneously different. Because you are spirit soul, you are one in quality with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But because you are a very minute particle of spirit soul, you are different from the Supreme Soul. Your position is simultaneously one with and different from the Supreme Soul. And the examples given are, just like the sun and small particles of sunshine, and just like the blazing fire and the small particles of fire. So, in order to execute our mission, we have to maintain our vision. And Srila Prabhupada did not just give us a negative vision, you're not this body. He gave us a spiritual vision that we're part and parcel of Krishna and that we will become happy when we learn to serve Krishna with our heart and soul. I've lost track of the time. Oh, it's there now. Okay. I want to invite questions, but I have to warn you that I don't hear very well, and I have difficulty even with a microphone, I have difficulty hearing. So if anyone has a question or a comment, please come up here and ask me. Otherwise, I won't hear, and I, you know.
Can you hear me all right?
I can hear. I might ask you to repeat a word or two, but I'll try.
It's mentioned here that King Yayati had 50 wives.
Yes.
So we noticed that usually Mataji doesn't like her husband even looking at another woman, what to speak of being married to another one. How did this... This is kind of common that Chitra Ketu had a whole bunch of wives, all these different, a lot of these personalities in the Bhagavatam had numeral wives. How could such a thing work? I can't even understand how, on any practical level, how a man could have so many different wives. How do the wives interrelate with one another? And what went on there?
Well, I'm sure there were problems. In the Bhagavatam, we also read about these problems. There's the mother of Dhruva, who was not the favorite wife, and therefore her son was told, "Get off my lap, you're never going to inherit the kingdom." And then we have the story of Lord Ramachandra, you know, one of, all of a sudden I go completely blank here, remind me, the story of Lord Ramachandra, it was whose wife that was, it was the mother, it was Lord Ramachandra's father, one of his wives, became jealous. Yes, Kaikeyi, right. So, there were problems. And then we have the example of Krishna, who had so many wives, and they were all completely satisfied. How did Krishna do that? He had a trick that no one else could do. He was simultaneously in every palace at all times. So in that way, he was able to have more wives than one can even dream of. So it was a system that a king could have many wives, but it was explained to me when I was a new devotee. I remember this, because I remember I thought that was very strange when I read that, you know, I'm a Westerner, that someone could have many wives. And it was explained to me that only a king who could actually maintain that many wives could do that. And, you know, King Yayati didn't do that good himself. His wife became jealous. I mean, it's inevitable. It's part of the material nature. We want to think. We think, I and mine. And anything that interferes with that causes a problem. I hope I didn't get around your question. I hope I answered it a little bit. Any other questions? Yeah. Did you write it down? Bring it over. No, bring it over. Sorry, I won't hear you otherwise. I'm sorry.
She says that if one thinks about, she's asking that if one thinks that I want to get married, and if this is sense gratification, how is the correct way to see the Grihastha ashram?
Well, whenever a couple is getting married, and they'll say, Mataji, please give us your blessing. I always, I don't know what it means to give a blessing. You know, I'm not a pure devotee. I just, I don't really know what that means. But I always like to give a little bit of advice that when a couple is first getting married, there may be some conception that there's going to be some sense gratification, either gross or subtle. But don't worry. As you stay married, that will change. It will also become an austerity. The Grihastha ashram is an austerity. It is meant for austerity because it is meant for purification. And so for one person or for a number of people, it may be that their path of purification is the Grihastha ashram. And it may be for somebody else that their path of purification is the Brahmachari ashram. But the goal is the same. And actually, as conditioned souls, that thought is always going to be there. We're going to seek that little bit of sense gratification. Even a Brahmachari, if he's honest, he will say, oh, I don't really want to get married because way too much trouble. There's a little desire for sense gratification. Sometimes Srila Prabhupada would tell a devotee to get married. He would tell that devotee. Mother Mandakini, she was told, she told Srila Prabhupada she wanted to serve his mission. Srila Prabhupada said, I want you to go to Russia and marry this devotee in Russia. What sense gratification was there? I don't know, not very much. Because especially at that time, Russia was a very dangerous place. It was very cold, she didn't know the language, she didn't know who she was going to go and marry. So not much sense gratification there. So I guess personally, the advice I would give would be that if there is some desire for sense gratification, then we pray to Krishna to remove that desire, and we pray to Krishna to show us the path that will help us to remove that desire. And if that path is to become married, and for most of us it is, then we accept that path when Krishna presents the opportunity. And sometimes we even may have to endeavor to pursue that path. And then there is always the instruction of the spiritual master, the instruction of older devotees, and then that will give us a clear vision of how to proceed.
Hare Krishna, Mataji, can I ask a question?
Haribo.
Mataji, we have a mission, as you said. And to fulfill this mission, we should have a vision.
Yes.
Right. And only through the vision, we can fulfill our objectives. Right.
We can what?
We can fulfill, we can complete our objectives.
Yes.
Right. But the problem comes in about the free will. Because with the free will, Lord Krishna has given a small freedom, and that freedom is very dangerous sometimes. It obstructs us and moving towards Krishna. Like Srila Prabhupada said, the body is a very bad bargain. Very bad bargain. But we have to make good use of this body to move towards Krishna. Now my basic question is now, how to channelize this freedom to move towards Krishna? Because this is obstructing us. The freedom is the main cause of sense gratification. Freedom is the main cause of distracting us from the mission. So is there any way to reduce this free will?
Yes. Freedom is a big obstacle in devotional service, in becoming Krishna conscious. It's also actually our nature. And without freedom, without that freedom for sense gratification, we would also not have the freedom to choose to love Krishna. So that freedom, which gets us all into trouble, either a lot or a little, I'm sorry. That freedom is also our ticket out of the material, our ticket out of the material world. Just like the mind is either our worst enemy or best friend. It just depends on how we use it. And just like that that statement from Bhaktivinoda Thakur, that we are in the material energy. Oh, thank you. These worked the last time. We are in the material energy, but we are also spiritual energy. We're marginal. And so, being marginal, we can make the wrong choice. Let's try to make the right choice every day. Any more questions? No more questions? Jai, should I tell you the story about this picture? Have you heard this story? You've heard the story. Who is enough people? Tell the story. This story is what happened that day is this picture was taken in New Vrindavan at the original farm, the original Vrindavan farm. In New Vrindavan, we call this farm Vrindavan, and then there was Bahulaban and Madhuban. And Srila Prabhupada was visiting, and Radhanath Swami was the head pujari. It was the Brahmachari ashram at the time, and he was the head pujari. And he it was the habit also in those days that Srila Prabhupada would distribute cookies to the devotees. Now remember that the Vrindavan farm is about a 1 hour, 45 minute to 1 hour walk from Bahulaban, which was the main farm, up a very windy dirt road, up and down hills, not an easy road. And so Radhanath Swami said, cookies, where are the cookies for Srila Prabhupada? And someone said, Radhanath, we don't have the cookies, they're at Bahulaban. They forgot to bring them. Forgot to bring them. Oh my God, what are we going to do? We have no cookies for Srila Prabhupada. This is terrible. He's going to think we're so spaced out here with the Brahmachari ashram. And then he said, oh, I know. I'll offer Srila Prabhupada the Mahaprasadam from the day before. In New Vrindavan, the Mahaprasadam was kept under lock and key and distributed the next day. So we got all the Mahaprasadam and got the deity's plates and bowls and put it all very nicely. Then he went up to Prabhupada's Vyasasan to his servant that was standing on this side of the Vyasasan. And servant looked at the plate and he said, "What's that?" Radna said, "That's Mahaprasadam for Srila Prabhupada to distribute to the devotees. Prabhupada doesn't want that, he wants cookies. Go get cookies. This is all we have, Prabhu, cookies. Go." So Radna didn't know what to do. So he leaves with the tray, goes around to the other side of the Vyasasan, where there's another chokidar, that's what they look like to us, chokidars, guarding Prabhupada. Chokidar said, "What's that?" "It's Mahaprasadam for Srila Prabhupada to distribute to the devotees." "Prabhupada doesn't want Mahaprasadam, he wants cookies." So Radha Swami said, "Please, this is all we have. The cookies are at Bahulaban. We have to give something to Prabhupada to distribute." Okay. So they put the tray in front of Srila Prabhupada, and Srila Prabhupada was so pleased. He started eating the prasadam. He was taking a bite of every preparation and then giving to the devotees. Devotees, kirtan was going on. Devotees are going nuts. You know, it was so ecstatic. Everyone's, you know, like that. And after each preparation, he was giving away the bowl or the plate. And Radha Swami is watching. He said, "I'm watching all the deities' bowls and plates being given away." He's very ecstatic, but he's also very worried. Anyway, Prabhupada did this with the whole tray of Mahaprasadam. And then finally, at the end, there's a bowl of gulab jamuns. And Prabhupada picked up a gulab jamun and bit into it, and the juice went squirting everywhere over all the devotees. And then the kirtan was so ecstatic, I thought for sure the floor was going to completely collapse because, you know, it was just an old farmhouse. And, you know, then Srila Prabhupada did this with the gulab jamuns, distributed the gulab jamuns. All the bowls and plates were gone. And Radha Swami was very worried. And then later at breakfast prasadam, he made an announcement. He said, "Prabhu, I'm very sorry to have to ask you this, but all these bowls and plates that were distributed by Srila Prabhupada, they're actually the bowls and plates for Radha Vrindavan Nath, and really this is the only opulence we have for our deities. So if you could please return them." And I'm happy to say that every single bowl and plate was returned. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.